All right, we're back with our final Q&A session of the day with our panel of Visual Studio experts. Joining me to take your questions, our Senior Program Manager, Charles Sterling, User Experience Designer, Travis Loudermilk, and Program Manager, Pranav Rastogi. How are you doing, guys?
Good. Hey, good.
Fantastic. Yeah. So what'd you think? Is this the first time you've watched this?
Yes.
That was pretty
awesome. It's been pretty incredible. I really do want to give a shout out to all you guys. Definitely Lan, Dimitri, and Seth, you've all done a really great job of helping us tell the story of what we did this week, and I think we really captured it. I had an absolute blast. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. So Pranav and Travis, you were there. You were not there. Tell us what you do, and then you were kind of there in a fun way. Tell us who you are and what you do, my friend.
Charles Sterling. I'm a senior program manager in the Visual Studio team, and I focus on test tools. And in years gone by, I've done a lot of the videos, and I've got to be there. But this year, as a mad keen fisherman, I decided I was going to take off early and do some fishing.
Sure.
So while I was on the vacation, I get this call. It's like, hey, Matt's going to do a presentation on your tools. Like, that's cool. Who's Matt? Turns out Matt Gerelbuth, who you were just watching the video, did a great job. I don't know if they said it in the video, hadn't actually looked at it 90 minutes before that shot. So that was the first time he looked at it.
So he called you on vacation while you were fishing and said, hey, I want to know how to do this.
I was just walking off my boat, yeah.
Oh my, and how do you talk someone through like a Visual Studio demo?
Well, it turns out, I don't know if you got to see it, the UI is actually, we spent a lot of time with our team, because the feedback we've got was that a lot of the test tools are just too hard when they're based in Visual Studio. So we spent a ton of time making it super, super simple. And the UI actually, I think it requires one input, one argument that you have to type in, and then there's one button. So if you can actually type in the URL that you want to test and hit go, you're set. Bob's your brother, or your uncle, as it were.
Nice. Bob's yeah. Well, he's my brother. You're uncle. All right, so some questions coming in about VSO. Can anyone just do load testing with VSO for free?
So the answer is a little bit grayer than that, as it always is. With every Visual Studio online account, you get 20,000 free load test minutes. The challenge with that is you actually need a Visual Studio product that can actually go out and create those tests. So if you have a trial edition, then it's all free as an air. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to need to buy Ultimate or Enterprise now as it is. So yes, it's free. It comes with your Visual Studio Online as far as the quota. And then the tools to take advantage of that can be free.
Fantastic. Another question from Oliver. Does this mean Visual Studio 2015 doesn't have load testing anymore and you have to only use the cloud service?
No, nothing could be further from the truth. We're actually increasing both the client and the online authoring experience. We're just optimizing the online authoring experience to make it very, very simple. But we're actually adding a ton of scalability. We can actually now run 100 cores for a single load test from either one. 10 parallel runs, so if I'm doing the math right, 100 times 10, it's like 1,000 cores.
Yeah, that's beyond my
myself. Yeah, as a marine biologist, I needed to count to 5.
Nice.
That's when you've done enough.
Yeah, it's too many. So is there like, because I know there's certain things and certain versions of the product, what do you get in the Community Edition for free?
So we have testing tools in the Community Edition. You can go out and use unit testing. As far as the load testing, that's not there. That is actually one of the enterprise-only features.
That's awesome.
But again, we actually have gap charts or gap analysis that will walk you through. You get this feature in this version.
That's awesome. So, Travis.
Yes.
Sometimes us developer folk do not take into consideration user experience. Sure. Now, people throw UX out all the time, but user experience, what does it really mean and how much should a UX person be involved or how much should you learn about UX when developing software?
Sure. As UXers, a lot of folks think of design as purely the design aesthetic, but what we were focusing on, particularly for this project, was the end-to-end experience. We knew we had a web portal and a mobile app that we had to make sure that they looked consistent and so on. So our focus during the project was just making sure we aligned with the developer teams and the PMs to make sure that we delivered a product that folks could actually use.
So a question from Frank, what tools did the UX team use to create the graphics for this app? What did you use to prototype the UI with the customer?
Yeah, so on the early stages, we'd use pen and paper, dry erase board.
Old school.
Because it's quick. It's you can quickly erase and say, this isn't working. But that also allows the customer to get engaged, too. You don't have a advanced tool in front of them. They can grab a pen and start sketching as well. So then we took it into a tool called Balsamic that helped us get a little bit higher fidelity. And then ultimately, our Adobe design tools to create the assets.
That's cool. So Pranav, I don't know if you did you do any of this work, but there is an accessibility framework that was built in. What was it called? Do you know what it is?
It was called Totally.
Yeah, that's so, two ones for the L's, because it's JavaScript. So, of course, you have this funny name, right, that it's not spelled like it sounds.
But you put it in, like, in a special way so that it wouldn't be in there when you were using tag helpers.
We used tag helpers to sort of put in the accessibility, like, a tool called Totally in certain parts of the site. And so this is something sort of Glenn made, like, on the fly, where it's a tag helper. It's running accessibility tools, like, only on a certain environment of your app. Like, maybe you don't want to run accessibility when you're running in production, but you want to run only in developer-only mode. So there's a quick tag helper that we sort of put out. And for those of you who don't know, like, tag helpers is a new feature in MVC 6, which allows you to sort of generate output on the fly. So it's an open source library. It's used by like the Khan Academy. So, and they do the accessibility checks on their site as well. So we just decided to try it out as well.
So your tag helper was checking if it was in debug mode or release mode to see if it even would output that.
Exactly. And so it only output the Totally script. It was if the site was running in debug environment, basically.
So that was. So let's talk a little bit about, there's a question from Patson about XUnit versus MS Test. He said, why did you guys use XUnit for your unit tests and not MS Test? I think the reason was primarily because they wanted to work with .NET Core on other environments.
Exactly.
And XUnit works with .NET Core. But what would be a good reason to use MS Test versus XUnit versus NUnit versus anything?
Well, actually, if you watch a lot of my videos, I'm using Selenium for my tests. I'm not using MS Test. I'm not using Coded UI. One of the principles of our test tools going forward is to engender the community projects and third-party framework. So regardless of the framework that you're using, we want to make sure it can be a first-class citizen within our ALM lifecycle. If you go out and take a look at any of the new build tasks, we actually have grabbed those, the published test results of different frameworks. And again, incorporating other test frameworks is probably our principal tenet for our test tools inside of the DevOps lifecycle.
I see. So there was a little bit, Scott Hanselman came in during, I think it was the second or third day, and had some concerns about accessibility. How were those addressed? And how important is it to actually address those early
on? Oh, it's critical. I mean, for developers and designers, we want our tools and services to be used by the broadest set of people possible. I mean, that's why we get into this business. So it's absolutely critical. Scott was able to point out some issues we had with color contrasting. In the first couple of days, we were just trying to land the general concept. So it was great to have him weigh in and help us in that capacity. We've since resolved those issues, and they're actually checked into the GitHub repository. But we certainly need more help for the developers to come in there and help us with some responsive stuff that we weren't able to achieve in those few days, but Totally works out really great. Makes it very easy to check those color contrast issues because it's embedded right there in the on the page. So the overlay is right there. So you just click it and boom, you can see whether or not your page is landing in the right criteria.
Awesome. Yeah. So Pranav, what part of the project did you work on?
Well, so I worked a lot on the authentication part of the site. You know, how do you log in with Facebook, Twitter, and how do you share these tokens both for the website and the API app? So how does the intrinsics of authentication work? There's an interesting add-ons that we did towards the end of the project, like after the 3 days had ended, where parts of the sites are only accessed by admins. So we have this new authorization feature in ASP.NET 5, which lets you check if the user belongs to a certain role or has a certain claim, then he can access those parts of the site. So,
and this is different than before.
It's different than it's fairly new, and it sort of enables the scenarios which were not possible or were harder earlier to do it. So I was pretty excited to sort of use these features in action. So that was really good.
One of the biggest questions we get is actually how to implement feature flags. And I've actually been pointing people to that for quite a while. Every time you do a DevOps talk and we talk about how we do staging and having insiders, we say, how do you guys do feature flags? So I've actually been pointing that to them to those features in the .NET framework.
So here's a question that might be a good question. I don't think we did automated testing. It said, did you guys do automated testing, web testing? We also had ladies on our team, by the way. So did us people, yes. Is there a way to do that automated web testing? Is there a way to do that in Visual Studio? I don't think we did it, but is there a way to do that?
Actually, as Matt was showing you, we could have actually taken the assets that he created when he actually was running those web tests and actually put those into your build itself. So again, I've got videos on how to incorporate all of the testing in as part of your build process, either whether or not it's continuous integration or continuous deployment.
And I'll actually expand that and say, we also did a few things where we have these gulp or grunt task runners. So you can have minification that can be done as part of your CI process. You can run JS linters that can inspect your JavaScript code. you can take it a stretch beyond also and say, like, I want to optimize my images as a build step. So there's a lot of ways you can sort of automate your process if you start integrating these workflows into your apps as well. So that's something we did as well.
I was actually delighted by that as a designer. So I was writing some CSS code in there, and when I checked it in, I thought, oh, I'm going to have to hop over and add it to the minification code, and it just refreshed and like instantly, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. So I was really impressed.
So it's not often that we get to talk to a UX person. Maybe we should have more around. Yeah. But what are some things as developers that we need to keep in mind? Yeah. If, say, we don't have a UX expert like
sure.
you, what are some things that we can do to make sure that we build a truly accessible
application? The first step you should be doing before you start any project is talking with the customer. And it seems kind of, of course I should, but it's amazing how quickly folks make that mistake, particularly developers, because they're so focused on, can I get the code to work, that they don't stop and think, you know, should I get the code to work? Is this something that I should be working on? So having the Red Cross participate with us early on was absolutely fantastic. It allowed us to kind of check our assumptions and make sure that we were building a project that folks could actually use out in the field. You know, this isn't just a humanitarian toolbox, a coding exercise. We really want this project to be used by volunteers and folks like the Red Cross.
So. I like that. So first, talk to the customer.
Yeah.
What about when you're actually building like a web screen? Is there like some tips?
So when we did views, pencil and paper. I know some developers would look at that and go, oh, I can't draw. That's not me. but you should. You should grab a pencil and just sketch out. I mean, if you can draw a square, a circle, and a triangle, you've got pretty much most of your UI covered.
Yeah.
And that really helps you because you're not investing a lot when you draw, right? So the minute you start writing code, you have an investment in that view. And it's harder to kind of turn away and say, hey, this isn't working because you've got a bit of code that you like and that sort of thing. So I would say start drawing. Get all of those views or screens laid out in front of you so you can kind of do an inventory check and make sure that you have A to Z covered, right?
I like that. So it's kind of cool now that we've talked about UX,
sure.
Something that developers just don't do well, and maybe I'm guilty of this, and we have you here, is testing. Is there like a good process for making sure you've got the right test? Because obviously 100% code coverage isn't necessarily going to save you.
Yeah, right.
But what is good code coverage? When should we start the testing process?
So this is why feature gates is so important, because I'm a huge advocate of testing in production. You get it out there just like what Travis is saying. It's live. Boom. Now, maybe you don't want always everybody looking at it, so you put a feature gate in it, and only your insiders can take a look at it. But what you can do then, coupled that with application monitoring, you can see how long they're spending on their pages, what pages they're looking at, what pathways are they going through. And you can actually have your users helping you actually identify how they're using it. And that actually helps you with something these guys do called quick pulses. Mm. Now that I see that they're actually in an area, let's talk to them about it. I know who they are. I know what they're interested in. Yep. Let's make sure that the feature is doing what they want.
And you're saying this is like an advanced way of talking to the user, because they're actually in this part of the application that you said is gated, and you can see what they're doing and how they're doing it. How is that accomplished?
Well, I do this on the VSO portal, so I can actually see the accounts, and I know the owners of the account, so I get to cheat. I get to look at the telemetry. But with Application Insights, what you could do is go out and use something called Track Event, mm-hmm. and you could actually put that same data in there if you wanted. By default, they whitelist the data pretty good to not have the PII data.
Right.
So you'd have to actually put some of that PII data in there if you didn't know who your gated customers were.
So PII, just for those that don't know, what is PII?
That's the privacy information where I can identify these people sitting in this room.
Got it. And so Application Insights then allows you to sort of put like little traces to know what people are using, when, and for how long.
A lot of it's actually done by automatically. This is done for free. So I know what page, and I can actually see what things they're doing on the page. Now, the track events themselves would go out and say, I'm going to add additional information. Maybe I wouldn't have actually tracked this button or how many cows they bought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm buying cows.
Sure. Like today, you and I were talking about
Monday's
that.
A good day to buy.
Yeah, that's right.
So you wouldn't track how many by default, and this would actually let you do that. So you could go out and say, people who are trying to save a lot of lives, and start categorizing those and say, I want to talk to those people that saved more than 15 people, whatever the case is.
And as a developer, I mean, you know, volunteer, right? Like, so if you're building an app, go talk to volunteers. I go to developer conferences and talk to developers about Visual Studio because that's the product that I work on. And I give people my email address. So travisl@microsoft.com, email me, let me know if you're running into an experience problem with VS. I mean, having that level of commitment is really how you get your app to that next level.
Right? And it might be the case that you build this brand new, really cool feature that you think is cool and your application insights tells you, nobody's going there.
Right. Maybe they can't even get to it.
That's
a good point.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
The pathway you think that would be natural, they can't even discover.
Right.
So it gets back to what.
So it's a combination of those both things: those application insights, but also being willing to talk to the customer gives you that holistic view.
Yeah. So there's a question about application insights from Mo. Does application insights work with Apache Cordova app or just web apps? What about Xamarin?
Actually, I believe the Apache Cordova SDKs are already out there.
Oh, cool.
Not certain about Xamarin. I'm actually in the load test team. I ran the tap for the Application Insights for a while, but I've been off of it for a couple months, and I know they've done huge advances. But anything that you can actually get to the core.NET framework, I can actually get Application Insights to actually show you telemetry for.
Cool. Right.
So again, and just because we don't have the SDK that's already out there, it can be done. One of our biggest customers are the Skype team with their Android clients. I can actually look at the I look at their telemetry data all the time because I'm very interested in seeing the pathways people are using products and how are they using them. And again, so we've got tons of telemetry coming in from the Skype Android team.
Wow, that's awesome. So we're going to move to Pranav because there's a question out there that's really good. Can you talk a little bit more about how integrating OAuth works for ASP.NET website? Does it work with MVC or only web forms? And I think you were the one that checked in that example, or at least the docs. You wrote the docs for integrating like OAuth with Facebook, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So he wrote the docs, people. So tell us how it works.
You should check out the docs, though. So like how it works, back in VS 2013, and it's MVC 5, Web Forms, Web API 2. So you can use OAuth with any of our ASP.NET frameworks. And what we did was we introduced ASP.NET Identity, which is the membership system which you can use to store your user profile data, and it also allows you to authenticate with a username password and other providers. And these providers are like Facebook, Twitter, any of the social providers that we have. And a basic flow is an OAuth flow where when a user logs in, so sort of you're redirected to Facebook, mm-hmm. to authenticate with Facebook, and you come back to the app, and then you can sort of do some activities in your app. Well, the benefits are you don't have to store passwords on your site. And as a rule of thumb, as a best recommendation, is if you start with any of our file new projects, they already have all the OAuth logic built into it.
I see.
So it's very easy to get started.
And again, it's at docs.asp.net. And if you want, you can actually contribute to the docs now too, right?
Correct. The docs are open source. You can send a PR for it. Like lots of folks have sent PRs for the docs that we wrote.
So, yeah, I've seen docs written by other people that are not necessarily working for Microsoft.
Yes.
Wow. So here's another question from Twitter. Would like to hear some more details on IntelliTest in Visual Studio 2015. What's IntelliTest?
So IntelliTest is a way of where we were going to automatically generate your unit test for you to get 100% code coverage. So if you have a method with lots of different inputs, it may take you a ton of time if you didn't already. Hopefully you're doing like TDD and you already have those tests. But if you're brownfield, you're handed some code, we will generate it for you. Another nice way that it can be used is going out and saying, I think I have coverage, and it'll actually show you the outliers where you didn't. So that's what IntelliTest is, at a broad sweeping view. And actually at release, we're I think the NUnit adapter, remember we talked about enabling different community frameworks? I believe the NUnit adapter is already there for IntelliTest. So you can go out and generate either MS test or unit test. And again, we want them all to be there. So.
Yeah. So is 100% code coverage required for good software?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't ship anything without that.
He went dogmatic on us, people.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I hope if there's anything that you got from me and Travis, it's about the customers.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if the customers are finding lots of value and you only had 80% coverage, maybe you go home feeling bad at night, but you have happy customers, and I think you could declare success and move on at that point.
So, classic 80-20 rule. Right?
That's right. So we only have about 2 minutes left. What did you learn during the process of building the application? And then we'll get you to talk a little bit about that too, Travis.
Building apps that use products across the company is hard. And I think for me, like I learned a lot about Cordova apps, I'm basically a web developer at heart, and that's what I spend most of my time in. So it's great to see how the Cordova apps are being used and how the two frameworks talk to each other. And
Did it help you sort of change the way you think about maybe how ASP.NET, the core, should be?
Yes, yes. And I especially on the auth side, I learned a few good lessons on, you know, how, because this is a very typical app on what customers would use. There's a web app and there's like a backend which can be used to talk to different devices. So, you know, how does authentication happen and how do I share information between these two apps? So it was good to see that.
And that's kind of cool, right? Because ASP.NET is not done yet. I mean, we're still in beta five. So there's still time to sort of incorporate the stuff we've learned about working with Cordova and Web API still.
Exactly. And we're going to take this feedback back, you know, sort of work on it and improve the product as we go along. So, yes.
All right, Travis, you...
Oh, gosh, there was a lot of highlights. I think the greatest thing about working on something with this intensity, because you have 3 days, is that people start to shed their roles, right? And so, you know, you have developers talking design and designers actually committing code, and that was really great.
It was crazy.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think the biggest thing that I learned is being able to sit with these just incredible developers. I mean, they really are amazing. I would hand over a design and say, I hope you can build this, and 10 minutes they'd come back, is this what you want? And I was like, that's exactly what I want. Nice. So being able to see them work, use our tools, again, from a UX standpoint, I could, you know, hear them kind of grumble about X or Y and say, oh, I'm going to take that back to the team. So that was probably the biggest thing for me.
Well, awesome. We're out of time. Thanks so much for spending time with us. We're at the end here, so it's just a few final takeaways to send you off with. Number one, download Visual Studio 2015. It's out. Watch our feature videos, learn more about Visual Studio 2015. There's tons of videos coming out. And contribute to the Already application. It's on github.com, htbox, Already. That's all the time we have in this special live event celebrating the final release of Visual Studio 2015. It's been my pleasure hosting the show for you. If you've missed any portion, not to worry, On Demand is available now. Finally, we'd like to invite you to continue the conversation on Twitter using hashtag VS2015. On behalf of Microsoft and the entire Visual Studio team here, thank you for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.